Ms. Schooley.
Your Honors. Your Honors, this case involves a sentencing issue. The case involved a person charged with being a felon in possession of a firearm who pled guilty and then at sentencing was sentenced to more than double his advisory guideline range for basically sending agents on wild goose chases. When he was first arrested, he immediately admitted to possession of the firearms in his vehicle. And within a few hours, he was being interviewed by ATF agents and started making admissions to numerous shootings he'd been involved in the past and even some murders. This led the investigators to try and track down if this information was true. The interview lasted about 6 hours, and he seemed to be very detailed, so they actually believed what he was telling them. Come to find out after at least 80 hours of investigation into the matters, nothing could be substantiated. Then when it came time for sentencing, there were two sentencing hearings. At the first one, the tapes were played, and it was brought to the court's attention about these lies that Mr. Kirkpatrick had told and the time consumed by the investigators. Then there was additional information that the defendant had submitted to the court, which the prosecution took issue with through the agent, that information was inaccurate, and again, he was providing false information, this time to the court. So the sentencing hearing was continued at that point so the defense could have additional time to investigate these new allegations. And following that hearing, the first sentencing hearing, then information also came to light from inmates housed at a county jail where Mr. Kirkpatrick was housed that he had made threats to or made suggestions to other inmates that he wanted the ATF agent in the case killed. Now, these statements that were made were brought to the attention of ATF through an attorney for a client who was told about these allegations by another inmate. When agents went out and interviewed that inmate, he said, well, this guy always is bragging. Everything he says goes in one ear and out the other. I didn't take it serious. But in talking to him, they were able to pin down that, in fact, Mr. Kirkpatrick had said things to the effect of, I'll get you bonded out of jail if you'll take care of the ATF agent at my sentencing hearing. Well, these interviews with this inmate were all after the fact of the first sentencing hearing. And the inmate then agreed to wear a wire and spoke to the Mr. Kirkpatrick again, and Kirkpatrick said, "Oh, don't worry about it. I've got somebody else to take care of that. Don't worry about it." But because of this, agents again spent numerous hours tracking down this information, even though they knew at this point that you couldn't really believe a thing that Mr. Kirkpatrick said, and that the inmates themselves didn't believe a word that he said. But the court, taking all those things into consideration, determined that the sentencing range of 37 to 46 months was not enough in this case. He wanted to send a message. Even though that guideline range included a two-level enhancement for obstruction of justice. And the court imposed a sentence of 9 years, 108 months, and compared it. The government was asking for 10 years. He said, no, those are only for the most serious offenses, one that we had recently had that involved a felon leaving a loaded gun laying in an area where children were present and ended in the death of one of the children. And he gave that person 10 years. But we believe that the sentence imposed of 9 years in this case is unreasonable, considering the other factors, mitigating factors, that the judge didn't I don't believe, totally took into consideration. I believe he put more weight on the factor of punishment than he did on the factors of the defendant's history of mental illness, and that history of mental illness involved using poor judgment and having impulsive behavior. He also, I don't believe, took into account the fact that prior to this, the defendant had been cooperating with law enforcement and, in fact, working for DEA and providing them information that they testified was...
Threatening to kill law enforcement agents is not an example of good cooperation with them.
No, but I Your Honor, in my opinion, I don't think that was a threat to kill. I think it was just to get me...
It was certainly a threat. It's a threat in the sense of Watts. It's a true threat. It caused reasonable law enforcement agents to go spend a lot of time investigating. Now, I should think that your argument would be stronger if you conceded that point and then said the problem is not enhancing the sentence based on that threat, which is, after all, another federal crime, but the way in which the district court figured out the amount of the enhancement.
Right. And I'm not sure how he came to more than doubling the high end of the guideline range based on all these factors.
Do you think that Judge Regan would have at least been justified in denying Mr. Kirkpatrick credit for acceptance of responsibility given his lies?
Well, I think it would have been a hard argument to overcome on my behalf if the judge had denied the two-level reduction for acceptance.
How would that have affected the sentencing guidelines range?
I think it would have bumped it up to... around 5 years. I'm not sure of the exact range, but two levels, I would anticipate probably around a 67-month high-end sentence. And I think...
Well, that's an interesting question. If you work this through, you start with his base, no reduction for acceptance of responsibility, an increase for obstruction of justice for the miscellaneous lies and hoaxes, and treat him as actually having been convicted of this threat, what would his sentencing range then be?
Well, it,
calculations?
I know the threat itself would have added around 24 months, I believe 21 months. And I'm not exactly sure what the that would bring it up to, let's see, 67 months, and then adding the, or taking away the two levels for acceptance and adding those two levels on would probably put it up to around 87 months.
And, of course, the judge is entitled to come in higher based on a qualitative assessment, highly discretionary in nature, about the severity of this conduct. It doesn't have to be quantified in some way and attached to the guidelines in order to survive appellate reasonableness review.
Right, but I think if he has already taken into account the threat and increased the sentence based on that, what he would have received if convicted of that, then I think he's already taking that into account. And I don't believe there would be a basis for him to go even higher.
Why not? It's a completely discretionary judgment call on the part of the judge.
But if you look at the offense itself, what he's being sentenced for, it's just a regular felon in possession. In fact, it was even in the trunk of the car. It's not on his person. Any other questions? All. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Mr. Clark.
Good morning, Your Honors. The judge in this case concentrated on the history and characteristics of the defendant, and the need for punishment and deterrence.
Do you know what the answer to my calculation question is?
I don't exactly, Your Honor, but I think that the 87-month... Sorry. I had at one time come up with a calculation when... In the first hearing, I believe it was in April, and it suggested initially before we learned about a lot of these things that had he had the judge considered this as an 18 U.S.C. 1001.
Well, let me tell you what my worry is. It certainly would have been possible for the prosecutor to charge this man with making a threat, with lying to federal agents and violating 1001 with his criminal history hoax. Suppose he had actually been charged and convicted of the threat and the hoax. He'd received the obstruction enhancement and had not received the acceptance of responsibility reduction. If that had led to a range materially less than 120 months, one wonders why the district judge is giving a higher sentence than if the man had been actually convicted. Now, under Gall and Rita, the judge may have every ability to do that, but normally you expect the judge to realize what's going on before doing it, because otherwise he's at risk of creating an unwarranted disparity in sentencing. He doesn't understand that he's giving a sentence higher than the guidelines if the defendant had been convicted of all of these things. Something very odd is going on.
Well, Your Honor, I think that he must have considered that. Again,
I don't know that he must have. If nobody in this record, including the probation office and the judge, has ever calculated what the guidelines range would have been had Kirkpatrick been charged with and convicted of these things, I don't know how one can say the judge must have known that he was exceeding what the guideline range would be for that circumstance.
Well, Your Honor, again, in the April hearing, I did make a suggestion to the judge based on a calculation using a violation of 18 U.S.C. 1001. I would grant you that I didn't increase or I didn't suggest to the judge something further when we learned about these other matters relating to the potential threat. I did not include a calculation for that, but the judge did have my suggestion that the way at least I was getting to a suggested sentence of 58 months, that is included based on a guideline calculation using 18 U.S.C. 1001 back in the April hearing.
Mr. Clark, I have the very same problem that Judge Easterbrook has, because this sentence exceeds what the guidelines would have advised if he had been convicted of making false statements to the government in addition to unlawful possession of the gun.
Yes,
so,
well...
So I really have the very, very same problem.
Well, Your Honor, I'll grant you that there is no specific calculation, but I think that, as Judge Sykes suggested earlier, that the judge does have discretion to depart. And here what we have is are two sets of investigations in addition to the underlying crime. We have two sets of investigations that cause tremendous amounts of agent time to be expended.
I understand that, but, I think the big problem is that a sentencing judge has to justify the extent of any variance from the guideline.
Well,
in the same way that pre-Booker departures had to be justified.
And I think...
I'm not sure that was accomplished.
Well, Your Honor, he did specifically calculate the guidelines, and I think that he calculated them correctly. And he did indicate on the record the reasons for his departure, which he linked to both the history and characteristics of the defendant as well as the need for punishment and deterrence in this particular case. he specifically said, without significant punishment, the defendant will not get the message. And so the judge did vocalize his reasons for the departure in this case. And I think that getting back to the amount of time that was expended by these agents on these two investigations, we have 160 hours on the first investigation, and I'm not sure of how many on the second, but we have investigations in four states in the first investigation and four separate states in the second investigation. So the judge was, judge did vocalize those as reasons for the departure.
He also mentioned that the government was asking for the maximum sentence in this case, which I think is wrong, isn't it?
I'm sorry, you think that it's wrong?
The government did not ask for the 10-year sentence in this case.
Initially, we were asking for 58 months, but
right.
Then there was the then there after that. You see, the two letters that were the subject of the first investigation were only presented to the government at the initial sentencing hearing in April. So that caused us to do the further investigation there, as well as the threat issue came up after the initial sentencing hearing. So
you did amend your recommendation?
Yes, I did amend it to the maximum because of the threats on the agent. So for those reasons, Your Honor, I think that the judgment should be affirmed. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Anything further, Ms. Scully?
I checked the sentencing guidelines during my time off, and if he did not receive the two levels for acceptance of responsibility, his range would have been 46 to 57 months.
And had been convicted of the threat and the under 1001 and so on?
I did not add that, but let's see.
Okay.
It'd be about 78 months, it looks like, on the high end.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.